You're listening to the MLB.com StatCast podcast.
Welcome back to the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Sitting here to my left, Matt Myers, MLB.com national editor. Matt, hi. Are you enjoying the baseball season?
I'm loving the baseball season.
We've seen so many interesting things happen, and it's only been like 10 games or so of baseball. Hey, we've got a really special guest on the phone with us today. I'm very excited to have joining us from Fox Sports, from MLB Network, the hardest working man in baseball, Ken Rosenthal. Ken, how are you?
I'm well, Mike. Thank you.
Ken, I've got a very important question for you. You appeared at the Sabre Analytics Conference in Arizona. I saw that you liked the piece that I did on pitch time, and I know you're working on something about Yasiel Puig and exit velocity. Has Brian Kenny won? Have you become a quote-unquote stats guy?
I've told Brian Kenny repeatedly that he has won, and he doesn't believe me. It's like the Japanese soldier running around still fighting World War II. And actually, I'm serious about this, that the idea that analytics has not been fully embraced and that there's still a war to be won, I'm not buying that. I actually believe that the battle is over and that it has been incorporated. Now, the battles now are more about application and is this use of analytics proper? And it's kind of an extension of the old argument, I guess. But the question of whether all 30 teams is using this stuff, that question was settled quite a while ago.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. And I think we just know that from being internal here. Every single team has access to the StatCast data. What they do with it, it varies by team, but you're absolutely right. Every team uses scouts. Every team uses stats. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I'm curious. You've seen some of this new data, and obviously you're using a lot of it. What's kind of like a mystery of baseball that you hope we're going to be able to answer with some of this stuff?
Outfield defense. That is by far and away the thing that I'm looking forward to seeing StatCast and other measures give us a better read on. Because we have measures for outfield defense. I don't really trust them. I don't trust defensive runs saved. It can be revealing, but is it entirely accurate? I don't know. But now with StatCast, you'll be able to measure routes. You'll be able to measure, and we are measuring efficiency and all of that. That part of it, to me, really will give you a lot. Now, I guess in the infield, it's a little more difficult. Mike, you can speak to this better than I can. But even there will be some enlightenment, I would expect, as well.
Yeah, I think we're obviously hopeful that's true. When you look at some of this stuff, you know, spin rate, exit velocity, I saw you in person in the Padres locker room in spring training, and obviously you were working in the room and doing a great job talking to anybody. Do you ever bring this kind of stuff up to them? Like, do they ask them about spin rate?
I've not asked about spin rate yet. I don't know that I've asked much about exit velocity, other than to mention to players, well, if that's how you're being measured, that's how you should get paid. But, of course, that's not how they're getting paid. And I don't know that players, for the most part, pay much attention to this. There are some players who definitely do. And pitchers especially, I've found, are or can be fascinated by the analytics and use it in a helpful way to make themselves better. But it's not something that comes up in the normal conversation in the clubhouse, from what I've seen,
Ken, I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to ask you a little bit about some of what we're seeing right now in the young season. Other than injury, are there any teams that you've substantially changed your view on already? Or even mildly change your view on it already?
This is a trick question, by the way, because my view is clearly there's nothing we could learn so far in like seven games that should change what we think about a team other than, you know, Schwarber or A.J. Pollock or something like that. I'm curious to see what you think.
I saw you tweet about that the other day, Mike. Yes. No, I would not say anything definitively has changed. However, if you want to look at the Orioles in a different light, and I don't know that you should, I still don't expect them to be a contending team, but the argument for them, which we've seen play out a little bit. Big power, very good bullpen, very good defense. They've got everything, it seems, but a quality starting rotation. Now, can you win with a rotation that has been as feeble as theirs has been, even in the successful run? I know the ERA is good, but they're not pitching deep into games. I don't think so, but I think after this start, it is possible to take more of a half-full view than half-empty, and I maintain my half-empty view, but I was turned a little bit by what I saw in the past week or so.
Well, I think you hit on something important there, and that's the difference between perception and probability. I agree with you. I look at that team, and I don't really perceive them any differently than I did before the season started, But I can't ignore the fact that they actually have won these games and they've banked these wins. And so that will help them as they're trying to work towards the playoff race. They're kind of starting from a head start, essentially. Whether they get there, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think Ken thinks so. I don't think Matt thinks so.
No.
So when you're looking at some of these teams, you know, obviously it's been a very small sample. What kind of stuff will you really put weight into when you're making evaluations? You know, for example, I tweeted this morning, the Marlins have a 356 batting average on balls in play. The Mariners have a 224. Major league average is just under 300. Obviously, that stuff's going to even out. But I think a lot of people look at that and say, wow, that's a new skill. I don't quite feel that way. What stands out to you?
At this early stage, the thing I really look at most is rotation and just how they're performing early. The Red Sox rotation, for instance. Now, it's a question beyond price. It remains a question beyond price, and I don't know that it's getting better. So that is something that I have been kind of looking at closely. But as far as other things, I remember last year, and I guess this would be an anti-analytics argument to some extent, but there was a lot of excitement in the sabermetric community about the Dodgers bullpen and about the way it was constructed so cheaply and the guys were performing well, and they all came back to earth. And that's why it's so tricky to really get caught up in anything that's going on for a month, even 2 months. This all balances out or plays out during the course of the season, and only really do we get better evaluations as it goes on. Now, that doesn't mean we don't sit here and look at things and wonder and judge, but 1 week is definitely too early. Usually the quarter poll is a better measure, I find. But even then, not everything comes to pass at the quarter poll that ultimately proves the course of the season.
Now, I think you're absolutely right about not putting too much into early season trends. But I'm going to ask this question anyway. Strikeouts are up again. It kind of plateaued for the last 2 years or so at 20%. Now it's up to 22%, which would be yet another record. And you know, it could just be an early season thing, possibly so. But if not, do you think that there's going to be a time where the league tries to do something about that? And if so, what can they do?
Well, this is a trend. So when we see 22%, like you're saying, Mike, I don't know that you can just dismiss that because it's been going on for, what, 6 or 7 years now. Now, going forward, to me, I believe that teams need to teach hitting differently. And enough of the big swinging. How about playing like Kansas City and San Francisco a little bit, putting the ball in play? We're seeing this trend have very positive results. Now, it doesn't always translate. We know that. But striking out, I know a few years ago it was not looked at as negatively as perhaps it should be. But it's come to pass, not only is it bad for teams that have those high strikeout rates, it's bad to watch. I don't know that it's healthy for the sport to have this lack of action that we have. So I would like to see instruction improve in this regard and start from there.
So strikeouts are up again. Home runs are up a little bit. It's the highest fly ball home run per fly ball percentage since 2003. And I don't know if those things are separate. Matt, I know you have a theory there, right? You think that everybody's just trying to grip it and rip it, essentially?
That's what it seems like. I mean, it certainly explains some of the, what might you know, there's a lot of theories about the spike in home runs late last year. Some of it attributed to all the great young hitters that came up. And I feel like, sort of to Ken's point, that the philosophy that's being taught now is, as you said, grip it and rip it. And it's just a lot of guys who come up and swing as hard as they can and don't strike out. And Ken, I guess we're wondering what your thoughts on maybe what for the rise in home runs.
I don't know.
That's probably the right answer.
It's not something I study a whole lot. I'm not an analytics guy, obviously. I don't do that as well or nearly as well, not even one-tenth as well as guys like Mike and Dave Cameron and Jeff Sullivan. It's not something I worry about on a daily basis, but I generally believe, Matt, that it's what you're saying, that's what's taught now. Grip it and rip it, try to crush the ball, and it has led to these three true outcome trends, essentially.
You know, I want to switch gears to another trend we're seeing. This has been something that's been kind of my baby for like the last 3 years. Hitters being more aggressive. You know, we saw for years work the count, try to get into the bullpen, and now that seems a little insane because you got guys in the sixth inning coming out and throwing 99 miles an hour. And it's interesting because we saw a bit of a jump in that from 2014 to 2015. It went up from 27% to 29% swinging at first pitches. It's actually fallen back a little bit this year to 28%. And that's despite the fact that the Rays have had this enormous jump. They swung at the first pitch 32% last year. It's up to 42% this year, which is huge. And I think that that's not an accident. They've clearly seen this trend. And so really two questions for you, Ken. One is, do you agree with that strategy? And two, what have you heard from inside the game about people taking this approach?
Well, that's interesting. And I saw Jeff Sullivan's article about the Rays the other day, and I was fascinated by it. That's not something 10 years ago anyone would have picked up, right? But Jeff picked it up, and I guess others picked it up right away. I would imagine because the Rays are feeling that maybe the pitchers that they're facing are around the plate, they can do that with. I don't know that you can do it with every pitcher. I don't know that you'd face a Matt Latos and take that approach, a guy who can be wild at times. But it is interesting, and clearly the idea of avoiding bullpens, that's something that we have seen develop in the last few years. What's the point of wearing down the Kansas City rotation when you're only getting Herrera, et cetera, and Davis down at the end? So that makes a ton of sense. As for swinging at first pitches per se, that I don't know as much about, and I haven't heard as much about that talked about in the game. The idea of getting to bullpens and that changing, that is definitely taking place, not by accident, and for very good reason.
So it's interesting. We have a team in Chicago now who has kind of gone in the other direction. You know, obviously, they're a great team, and everybody thinks they're the favorite, but they are on track to be the most patient team in baseball history. We just had August Fagerstrom on our site from Fangraphs write about this, that they're going to have the highest walk rate probably in the history of baseball. And it's interesting to see a team that is kind of analytics forward go in a little bit that other direction, I think. But really, my question about the Cubs for you is, Kyle Schwarber, does he ever play another game for the Cubs? And I don't mean that he won't come back from injury. I just mean if he can't catch anymore and they don't ever want to put him in the outfield, is this the last we've seen of him? Is he traded somewhere?
I think that's a fair question. And actually, I did a video the other day and talked about that. Where is he going here? What are we doing? And in my view, you know, the view of a lot of people, he's an American League player. Because this could affect his ability to catch somewhat. It certainly increases the risk. And in the outfield, I don't want to give up on the guy because he is a good athlete and he has worked at it. But we've seen some things now, and we saw a terrible injury that resulted in part, perhaps, from his inexperience. So what you ask is very fair. Will he play another game for the Cubs? I would expect that would happen, Mike. I don't know that his long-term future is with the Cubs, though.
All right, Ken, we have one more question for you before we let you go. You know, we just talked about the Cubs and the Rays, two clubs that are very well known for being analytically inclined. You know, from your time, you know, from what you know around the game, you're obviously very well connected. Is there a club out there that's more analytically inclined than they're giving credit for? Like, who's the most stealth analytic team?
Underrated
analytic team that maybe the public doesn't know about?
That's a really good question. Allow me to think about it for a minute. I'll say this. The Marlins are getting that way. They're getting more that way. They finally started incorporating analytics with this latest front office. It's front office number 23 under Loria. But, yes, they are moving in that direction. I don't know that there's one that is necessarily stealth, because I think now we know all the actors. We know who they are. People would probably be surprised to know the extent of the Yankees operation. I did an article a few years ago. I think it was about the 10th anniversary of Moneyball, the book, something like that. And I went really deeply into the topic and discovered that the Yankees had the largest analytics department by a million miles. At the time, they had something like 20 to 30 in their department, while the A's had two. I don't know that most people realize that. I think people understand the Yankees are an analytics team for many reasons. But at the same time, how deep they're into it, I'm not sure that is well known.
I think it's interesting because I wouldn't have thought of the Marlins, and that's why I'm glad you asked that question, Matt, because we've talked about the Marlins a lot on this show. They are our favorite StatCast team, from Gordon and Caps and Realmuto and Stanton and Ozuna and Yelich and so on. So just another reason to find them fascinating, I guess. Hey, Ken Rosenthal, thanks so much for your time. Really good stuff.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Absolutely. That's Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports and his MLB Network. And he, listen, if you follow the show, then you already follow Ken, so you know who he is. But great stuff from Ken. Thanks again. Well, Ken Rosenthal is awesome, and I've had the opportunity to spend some time with him. But, you know, you don't think of the big national guys as being really kind of interested in learning about the new stats, but I think he stands out in that regard. I respect that about him.
Yeah, no question. You got to keep up with the times. Like a lot of the GMs, you see GMs in the game who sort of have evolved over the years. So it's if you're a national reporter like that, it's only natural.
I think that's absolutely true. So let's get back to some of the early season trends we've started. I have to ask you a question. Who has the best rotation in baseball right now? And I say this, it's like 1:30 on Thursday, so anything that happens after this doesn't count for my purposes, as they're probably going to get lit up this afternoon. But who has had the best rotation in baseball in the early season?
I would obviously maybe want to say the Mets or the Indians, but I'm guessing that's not the answer.
I already know you know the answer. It's the Philadelphia Phillies, right? Which is actually shocking. When you think about that team, expected to lose about 700 games, that rotation's been stellar. 2.50 ERA, which is best so far. 2.67 FIP, fielding independent pitching, which is second best so far. And it's really an interesting collection of guys. You know, Aaron Nola was a top pick. Jeremy Hellickson is just kind of a veteran guy to fill a spot. Velasquez came from Houston. And Jared Eichhoff came in the Cole Hamels trade. Those guys have really been impressive. All four of them have an above-average strikeout percentage so far.
It's a cool staff. You know, it's sort of a mix. I mean, Velasquez has a pedigree. He was a big prospect.
Yep.
And was a big part of that trade. Nola also, high
first,
pick.
First-round draft pick.
Yeah, Eichhoff is a little bit of a diamond in the rough. The 15th round pick out of a college album that I'd never heard of.
I saw him throwing curveballs the other night, and it was stellar. And that's really what stands about this team. They have the highest average curveball spin rate in baseball at 2647 RPM. The MLB average last year was 2307, so that's considerably above average. Not only that, they have the most swing strikes on curves. Now, that's most raw number because they've thrown the most. That's percentage. I think they're seventh. But I think those two things go hand in hand. A high spin rate is going to get you a lot of swing strikes.
Yeah, and the fifth guy in the rotation, Charlie Morton, I was actually looking at the lowest exit velocity allowed by pitchers thus far this year. And, of course, I only wrote down the top three, so I can't remember where he was. But he was in the top 10. So yeah.
Well, that's right. He's not getting hit hard, but he's also not hitting the plate. His walk rate is like a billion right now, so that's his issue. But it's interesting. All five of those guys are really fascinating. And, you know, that team, the bullpen, I don't know, but that team could be more interesting than we thought this year.
I'm of the belief that that team's turnaround will be much faster than people think it will be, because they already have the makings of a decent rotation. And even if you believe in Mark Appel, well, maybe that's another guy. They've got J.B. Grover on the way. They basically, Ryan Howard is going to come off the books. They have the ability to carry a big payroll so that they could be players in free agency, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, Howard's the only guy who's making big money this year, I think.
I think that's probably true. And I'm not going to use the T word around here, but I've talked to fans and I'm like, what do you think about this team? They're probably not going to be very good this year. And we're excited. Like, we're sick of watching the old core like try to stagger along. I want to see J.P. Crawford come up. I want to see Noah. I want to see Mike Alfranco, who we've talked about a lot. Homered again yesterday. I mean, this is the core of the next good Phillies team. It's not going to be reflected in wins and losses this year, but this is actually, these are the guys who are going to form that team that is good.
You know, we don't want to read too much into a week, and, you know, you can hold this against me later in the year, but, you know, early in the year, before the season started, the talk was Phillies, people were grouping the Phillies and Braves together. I think that's going to look very silly.
There's separation now, and I don't say that because the Braves are 0-7 at the moment. I mean, I partially say that, but, you know, I think the Phillies...
They're 0-8, actually. But,
is it 0-8? Yeah. Oh, we'll see who can even keep track. So anyway, the Phillies are a whole lot more interesting than we gave them credit for. So if we're talking about the NL East, we should probably stay in the NL East and go to the Mets, because we've talked a lot about the Mets all winter, because obviously they went to the World Series last year. Fascinating team. And there's a lot of velocity trends that have stood out about the Mets for me. And I think the first one is that, and you came up with this, they have allowed the lowest average exit velocity as pitchers, 86.7 miles an hour. That's the best in baseball. Counterpoint, they have hit for the lowest average exit velocity in baseball, 87.2. And I think that's an interesting dichotomy so far.
Well, yeah, for Mets fans who might be worrying, at least the pitching, for the most part, despite the fact that Matt's got rocked in his first start and that Matt Harvey has not really been missing bats, the pitching thus far has been effective.
Right. And in addition to those two things you mentioned, DeGrom has been either injured or his velocity's been down and now he's away from the baby. It hasn't really been a great start rotation-wise for that team other than Noah Syndergaard, who is basically a god amongst humans.
Yeah.
But they're really doing well. But what's interesting to me is you look at that team and you think of flamethrowing. And so I looked at that team and I said, I think they're going to do better this year because they got rid of Jonathan Neese, who doesn't throw hard. They got rid of Dylan Gee, who doesn't throw hard. And last year they had 23.9% of their pitches, 24% were 95 and above. Now, so far it's only 23%. It's actually less than last year. Maybe it's because it's been cold the first week, possibly true, but I think it's because DeGrom last year threw 35% of his pitches over 95, and this year he's thrown 0% of his pitches over 95.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen if that lat issue that sidelined him and may end up putting him on the DL is part of the reason, and maybe he comes back and is throwing harder again, or it's possible, you know, pitchers, their velocity does go down with age. Doesn't necessarily mean they'll become less effective, but it often does. But sometimes it means you have to learn how to pitch differently, and that brings us to Matt Harvey, who's kind of a good example because his velocity is down a little bit too. He's still throwing his average fastball is still above 95.
Yeah, we had him at 51% above 95 last year. Now it's 34%. So basically from a half to a third, which is still pretty good. But I think you found something interesting about his spin too.
Yeah, it's down. I mean, last year it was 2,300 plus on his fastball, and this year it's just above 2,200. So it helps explain why he isn't really getting nearly as many swinging strikes. In his start on Sunday, he had one swinging strike on his fastball, which could be cause for concern, but it also could be the evolution of a pitcher. His ground ball rate is above 50%, which it's never been before. And last year he talked about how to try and pitch deeper into games, he was trying to pitch more to contact. So this could be him kind of trying to figure out what pitcher he is, and maybe he's going to be less of a strikeout pitcher, and maybe this is an early season blip. We just something to keep an eye on.
We should reiterate what those numbers mean as far as spin. So 2,300 to 2,200, with that 2,300 RPM would be above average. And we know that above average spin for a fastball tends to lend itself to swinging strikes. 2,200 is pretty close to being league average, which is generally not what you want to see in a fastball. But you're right. If he's getting fewer swinging strikes, at least he's getting more ground balls out of it. And, you know, that could help kind of counteract it. But you're right. He might be a very different guy than we saw last year.
Right now, he is 11th amongst pitchers in exit velocity against, which at least suggests while he's pitching more to contact, he's at least inducing weak contact. So, you know, maybe that's, I'm not saying he's about to suddenly become Bob Tewksbury, but
that's a name. That is not a name I expected to hear today. But let's go to their offense for a second. You know, we mentioned that they've got the lowest exit velocity as a team, and Mets fans are just pulling their hair out over the offense, even though it's been like 10 minutes into the season, especially with Daniel Murphy hitting the ball well in Washington. You look at a couple of these guys. Asdrubal Cabrera, 83 miles an hour exit velocity, also has zero walks. Neil Walker, 87 miles an hour exit velocity, also has zero walks. I think both of those guys will be better. They're clearly acquired more for their offense than their defense. But Cespedes, I find really interesting. Off to a slow start, his exit velocity is exactly the same as it was when he was with the Mets last year, 92.6. And you think to yourself, that's stunning. He was destroying the ball last year, and now he's not doing anything. How is that possible? Well, strikeout percentage is up from 21% to 34%. He's missing a ton more strikes, and I think we saw this with Adam Conley in the Marlins last night. He struck him out three times on high fastballs, and that's a trend. His first couple years in the big leagues, he would see 19 to 21% of balls being 3 feet off the ground or higher. So far this year, 28%. I think people are finding that hole.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be that the book is out on Cespedes, and it'll be interesting to see if he can learn to lay off the pitch just enough that to keep pitchers more on. It's not even about learning to hit the pitch.
Yeah.
Or
because usually they're not strikes.
Yeah, it's just learning to lay off it enough to keep pitchers off it, honest, and get more in the zone pitches that he can handle. He did hit one the other night, I think, that was like in the launch angle, exit velocity sweet spot for home runs. Maybe a little high. It was like 35 degrees, but it was up in a huge wind. Basically, like, Christian Yelich caught it, like, standing with his back against the wall.
You know what? I think I remember that. Because I remember tweeting about it. It was in front of the 358 sign, and StatCast had it tracked as 357.1, and that made me feel real good about all the technology. But what you're saying is that was, would you call that a barrel?
It was actually above.
It was
above a barrel.
Because I thought maybe he'd be unlucky on a barrel.
No, that was. But it was. I think it was usually what would be a home run zone. But
it's unfortunate for him it didn't get out because of the wind.
But anyway, I want to get back to barrels in a second. But first, I want to talk about another player with an alarming early season trend. One of the big names of the offseason, probably part of the most controversial trades of the offseason.
Decades. The one offseason. I can't remember a trade like that.
And that's Shelby Miller. Shelby Miller has some alarming early season trends.
Yes. So far, I mean, I don't even know where to start here. His velocity is down, 95.1 last year to 93.6. So that's not a good start. Again, it's cold weather, although I guess he's actually pitched mostly at home or in Arizona. I don't think he's been anywhere cold yet.
No.
So I don't think that's actually affected him. And it's interesting because the velocity is down, but he's using that fastball a whole lot more. Last year, he threw a sinker 22% of the time. This year, not at all. Last year he threw his fastball 43% of the time, and now it's up to 60%. So he's using a fastball that's going slower a lot more, and that's a weird choice to me.
Yeah, and the results have not been good. His exit velocity against right now is 95.8 miles per hour, which
is
second worst among all starting pitchers. Arizona as a team has the worst exit velocity against when you consider they brought in Greinke and Miller to sort of basically make their give them an elite rotation. That's a terrible early season sign. And the big issue for me with Miller is that he's also not really striking guys out. 6.5 per nine thus far. So he's basically throwing fastballs whatever the plate that are getting hit.
So he's throwing the sinker less, so he's not trying to get ground balls, and he's throwing the fastball more to strike out guys, but he's not striking them out.
I mean, the one good sign, I guess, like, is that home runs per fly ball is what, it's like 30%? That's obviously...
A third of every fly ball leaves the park.
That's not going to sustain.
What if it did?
But if you're going to be allowing that much contact, hard contact, you have to be missing bats, and he's not.
And he's just not.
So that has to be concerning if you're... rooting for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I think that was an underrated part of that trade is him going to that ballpark in Arizona. That certainly doesn't help. They gave up a lot. They need him to not be okay. They need him to be excellent. And it's a long way to go to get back to excellent right now.
Yeah, the last thing I want to touch on this show is Shelby's former team, the Braves. We mentioned them before. They are off to a poor start, to say the least. And right now, I don't know if this is one of those things where I'm not sure if it's luck or not or what it is, but right now on barrels, which we've talked about on the show, which are balls with an exit velocity above 100 miles per hour with a launch angle between 10 and 30, just a colloquial stat that Mike
hard
and I
hit,
just...
Hard-hit line drives.
Hard-hit line drives.
Major League Baseball hits like 700 or something on those kind of
balls. The league slugs just a shade under 2,000 on them. Braves pitchers are allowing a 31-25 slugging percentage on such... batted balls. So they are, I don't know if that's bad luck.
Is it bad luck? Is it bad defense? Is it that we're grouping everything over 100 and all of those for them are like 118?
It could be that. So Braves have by far the worst in baseball. Their pitchers have allowed by far the worst in baseball on balls like that. Even worse, as hitters, they're slugging 1,300 on such balls, which is 27th in baseball. So theoretically, you could argue they're getting unlucky on them as hitters.
Right.
And getting unlucky on them as pitchers.
1,300 with a league average of 1,970. So they're getting less out of those balls than the average.
On both sides of the ball.
On both sides of the ball.
On both sides of the ball.
That is how you start out 0-8.
Yeah. The flip side of that is the Nationals, who they've played now. This will be their seventh game today. They've played them six times.
Listen, I love the Nationals. Can we just slow our roll on them for a minute until they start playing other teams?
Yeah, the Nationals... as a team, their pitchers have allowed a 1333 slugging on quote-unquote barrels, well below league average. So their pitchers, again, this could be great outfield defense, or this could be, you know, balls that are just 101 miles per hour, so maybe they're just barely
just
reaching.
Just barely making it. Does that say more about the Washington pitchers than the Atlanta hitters? We gotta wait until we start seeing some other teams come around. And I'm actually looking at this. They're the second luckiest, not luckiest, but second most productive, tied for first, actually, most productive with St. Louis on the barrels, too. So it's kind of interesting that both of these two teams are at the opposite
extreme,
both pitching and hitting.
It seems to me this lends more to what you were saying about the quality of the Nationals versus the Braves.
Yeah, if the Nationals are still doing this in a month when they've started going through some other teams, then we'll talk about it.
Hey, you know, if you're a good team, you got to beat up on the bad teams. No question, the Nationals are doing what a good team needs to do. So you can't take that away from them. But in terms of rating them against the other teams and top teams in baseball, I think it's way too early to evaluate them when they're basically all they've done this far is beat the Braves.
Right. And for the record, I do love what the Braves are doing long term. They have so much talent in that farm system. It's just not going to be a good year this year. It's going to be another year or two before we see some of those guys come up. But long term, I love what they're doing. And it'll be interesting to see 3 or 4 years from now, are the Braves and Nationals at the top of the East? I could totally see that.
No question.
All right. Hey, that was a lot of fun. Ken Rosenthal was really good. I enjoyed having him on. And as always, Matt, I love talking about baseball with you. And you know, I'm pretty sure there's about 9 games going on right now, so let's go watch all of those.
Sounds like a plan.
This has been the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Matt Myers here with me. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.